Hello, people of the world, and welcome to today's episode of the Unity Project podcast. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, the Unity Project podcast is one about the relationships that we have with our bodies. Today, I had the honor of interviewing Tamika Staley. Oh my goodness, was she so much fun to talk to. We actually got to do it via Zoom for the first time, so I got to see her on video, which if anyone's interested in watching my podcast versus listening to it, go check out the link in my bio to see that. I'm so excited about it. But anyway, Tamika is a sex educator and spoken word activist. They are a resident of West Columbia, South Carolina, and born and raised in Columbia, South Carolina. She is the founder and CEO of Youth Affirming Sex Education, which is a youth organization specializing in comprehensive, decolonized sex education for 12 to 19-year-olds. Their mission is to provide culturally sound workshops, curriculum, and one-on-one parent sessions to encourage healthy sex practices so all youth can have the tools to affirm themselves and their communities. Tamika has been facilitating sexual health workshops and discussions with youth since 2012. They have been a safe site volunteer for the National Great American Condom Campaign and has worked on various contraceptives initiatives in South Carolina, including the South Carolina Contraceptive Access Campaign. Tamika is currently developing her own sex education curriculum and will one day have this curriculum distributed in public schools across the country. Tamika is dedicated to ensuring youth can make informed decisions about their sexual health and strives every day to create a consent culture, one sex formation at a time. Guys, we have an inherent right to know how our bodies work and to know that our bodies are not wrong. I am so happy that I want to say now more than ever, but really always we need people like Tamika to be heard and be listened to and just have a voice and influence over everybody. Tamika has so much to share and her mission and her business is one of the most important things I've heard in a long time. So I'm so honored to get to have her on my show, and I'm honored that they get to talk to you guys through the podcast. So you guys enjoy. How are you doing over there?
I am excellent. How are you, Jackie?
I'm doing good. I am so excited to be seeing your beautiful face. This is, as I told you before, my first time I'm doing one over Zoom. So I get to actually like have a conversation with you. It feels like in person, but you know.
It does. I mean, I think that's the thing about the COVID times. It's like the Zoom is our new in-person alternative, I would say. So
absolutely.
It's not the same for sure, like always in person, but it is a good way to still connect and see, put a face to a name outside of picture. So I love that.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's why I'm so surprised it took me so long to get on the Zoom boat, because I have been putting it off. But here we are, man.
I'm excited. Well,
for those that are watching on YouTube, do you want to tell about your shirt real quick for those on the video?
I do.
I love it.
So, this is one of my two merchandises that I have, Sex Formations and Reparations. It is a t-shirt under my brand, Yase. It is a youth organization where I provide comprehensive decolonized sex education for 12 to 19-year-olds, families, and communities. So you can definitely purchase one at weareyase.com. And Yase is an acronym that stands for Youth Affirming Sex Education. So weareyase.com, weareyase on Instagram, weareyase on Twitter, everything. That's Y-A-S-E, weareyase. So yeah, and it's really just to uplift. A sex formation in and of itself is a phrase, a word, some type of declaration to affirm things about sexuality, sexual health, and sex that we typically have not been taught in our society. So anything that was considered taboo, like same-sex relationships or teens accessing contraceptives or the fact that you got to wait till marriage to have sex or that sex is only made for procreation, those type of norms, the sex formations will reclaim or combat some of those norms and make them more expansive. So a sex formation is something that just expands and sometimes combats a lot of those norms that we have been taught that are very limited and very whitewashed in a lot of ways, very westernized in a lot of ways. So a sex formation, for example, could be that any gender can have an abortion. That's a sex formation, right? Because those are something that we haven't, so we've been taught that abortions are for people that are women, like women only. Like, and we know that that's not true. You know, you just only need a uterus to have an abortion. And not only women have uteruses, because we have more language, and gender is a social construct and it's not a binary, right? So that's just an example of a sex formation. And you can make up your own sex formation, and I encourage all of you to do so. And of course, reparations are always important because we need them, right? Mm-hmm. Black folks are old. Juneteenth was yesterday, and the state has yet to write a petition for reparations, but we're going to continue to put pressure on them until they do. And in the meantime, in between time, you can create your own form of reparations by supporting like groceries or funding and grants and philanthropy, emotional support, free therapy. Those are things that you can do to, in the meantime, in between time, because reparations have to be petitioned by the state. But we think, for me, these two things combined is what is going to help disrupt a lot of systems that we are experiencing, disrupt anti-trans and anti-queer, anti-black and anti any marginalized community that is facing some type of oppression, right? For me, these things are what is going to help disrupt that and create a more imaginative world, because that's the world that I want to live in. So, yeah, that was a long explanation. However, so there we go.
Oh, thank you for sharing all that. I want to make sure that as much of that kind of information gets out as we can on this podcast. So I'm happy that that question about your shirt turned into that. That was awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Timica, I am so excited to hear about your story. I was looking up some different people online that were very focused on sex education. It's a topic that is very, very close to my heart, as I'm sure so many people's hearts, and it's so important. And it's something that because I grew up very, and I don't know your backstory, we're about to learn, but I was very much grown up as a purity culture, super Christian, very like, so sex education just wasn't a thing. And so I am noticing now more than ever, like my own internal shame and stuff and things that I've never learned and language I never had access to. And so I'm really excited to talk to people like you, especially since you're working with kids. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So yeah. And I grew up the same way, like purity culture, Christian household, very modest, traditional. And I just did not have most of the conversations that I talk to my young people about when I do get a chance to facilitate workshops with them. So that's a part of what led me to want to be a sex educator and start this business, because I just didn't have that for a long time. At some point I did have it and it just inspired me. But like the years of me first coming into what sexuality is and what sexual health is, I didn't have that. And a lot of the children now and teens now don't have that in their schools. It's still very limited. It's still very purity and marriage focused and very cis heteronormative, you know, along those lines. And that just doesn't work for everybody. So,
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Well, I'm so excited to talk and to just spread your message more. Timica, to start off the interview, I'm going to ask, can you please describe the relationship that you have with your body?
Oh, that's such a beautiful, juicy question. The relationship I have with my body, I only can describe it as expansive. Like, I have a very expansive relationship with my body. And it is also complex at the same time. So I'll start with the expansive part. And the expansive part for me is that I enjoy my body for how it looks, number one, like just the aesthetic of it for me. I'm constantly looking at myself, clothed and unclothed, figuring out new things, noticing new things about it, how it's changed as I age, how it's changed as I experience different things too, right? Because I think that's one thing that I've learned about my body is that it changes not only based on like a chronological aging, but also chronological experiences too. So different experiences make my body go through different changes that I like, dislike, love, and sometimes even hate too. So that can be trauma, that can be new experiences that are fun and joyful that I haven't before, new experiences that are adventurous, you know. So and I engage with all of those emotions about the changes. So that's the expansive part. So I don't just engage with the things that I like about my body or that make me happy about it based on what I've experienced and the changes. But I also engage with the things that I don't like about it and that are indifferent, and I address that. And sometimes addressing that can just be affirming those things that I may not like, dislike, love, don't love, with words of affirmations, or it may also be with touch, like to just soothe myself and to nurture myself, even in those days where I really just don't feel like it, you know, I do it anyway. So mm-hmm. That's the expansive part. And the complex part is that there are days where I don't want to be in the body at all, mm-hmm. right? And that's tough because a lot of the time it makes me question whether it is a case of like me not wanting to like be here, like if I'm having suicidal ideations, like I just don't want to be on the planet kind of thing, like in this physical realm, or whether I just don't want the type of body that I have. I want something new. I want something different. So like sometimes I struggle with my breasts. Like I look at myself and like, I just don't want these. I don't want these to be here today. Mm. I don't know. They should not be around. I want them all gone. So that's been different. And I don't know what to do with that sometimes. And I kind of just sit with that and just be in that moment. And then there are other days where I'm like, oh, I want these girls up and out. You know, I love yeah. them. They're swinging. It's hot girl summer. You know, we just fine. The titty juice, you know. Mm-hmm. I always tell people like, you know, you've been inducted into my life when you get a titty shake. Like if you get a titty shake, you're in. You're in the club. Like you get the titty. So that's the complexity of it too for me. And I am a person that embraces all of my emotions because I think they're all valid and they come from my roots. So sometimes I'm like, I just have to find the root of why this is the way it is, but it's valid, whatever it is, because I'm feeling it and I trust myself and I know I would not allow myself to feel something that did not come from a place of like trying to make myself heal or acknowledge something from somewhere. Like it just doesn't show up on its own. So I try to really be graceful and gentle with myself when I do have some of those complex feelings, because they're real and it's just a thing that happens. So,
wow. You sound like you've really put a lot of thought in your life into your body and your complex relationship with it and your beautiful relationship with it. I don't even know where to start. I love how you said you love the aesthetics of your body. Like you love what it looks like. I think that's so good. And that's such a hope for myself and so many people that I talk to be able to say that confidently. And also just to be able to be okay with saying, I love my body as like, without trying to like, I don't even know how to explain this, but you know how you don't, in the past we were raised like, or I was raised to be super, super humble and like brush off compliments and like, I don't know where to categorize that, but just being able to say, yeah, I love the way that my body looks and just being confident in that is so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I was raised somewhat so that when it came to the body, yes, when it came to like my face and my looks, oh yeah, my mom. And my dad somewhat, but really my mom was definitely like, oh, you're gorgeous. You're beautiful. You look like me. So you're gorgeous. You're beautiful, of course, you know? So I was always, that was always infused. So I always had confidence, but when it came to the body, not so much. Yeah, I can't even say that I was taught to be humble about it. It just wasn't talked about, period. Like that just was not even a thing that I was told I could do to talk about my body, to even say or compliment or affirm my body. And I think for me, that did me a disservice, because then once I got out into the world in school, as I continued to, you know, matriculate, I started to get negative comments about my body that made me dislike and hate my body. And I think if I would have had more guidance and permission, because then I felt like I had to have permission to, you know, big myself up in that way, then it would not have affected me, because I struggled with body image for a long time. And sometimes I still do. I'm a spoken word artist too. If you didn't know, but yeah, I do that for a living as well. So I have a poem called 20 pounds. It's a viral poem. You can look it up online anywhere. And it talks about my relationship with my body in a way that has changed over time, but the impacts and the negative comments and how other people have perceived my body that I internalized over the years. And yeah, I just was never given permission to affirm the body or talk about how beautiful my body is, how much I love my body. It just wasn't a thing that I knew I could do, so I didn't. And I kind of took on everybody else's opinions and perceptions about my body instead of creating my own. So I had to really unlearn and relearn and recreate a lot of norms around my body, the type, its shape, you know, things of that nature. And I also really had to like reparent myself too in those ways, because I feel like that is something that your parents are supposed to, you know, instill in you, that you have the permission and to have the audacity to love everything about yourself and actually say it out loud, because it gets to be named and it gets to be spoken out into the universe to manifest in the ways that you want it to manifest in, and not in the ways that other people say that it's supposed to show up.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love all that so much. Your poem, what was it called? 20 pounds?
20 pounds. Yeah, 20 pounds.
Okay. Would you be open to, towards the end of the interview, or how long is it?
Just so it I is know like 3 minutes. It's no more than 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
Okay. No would more. You be open to reading it at the end of the interview?
I would be open to that. I would definitely recite that for y'all.
Okay. I didn't know you had one that was about your body. That's perfect. I would love to hear it. And I'm excited for everyone else to get to hear, whoever's listening to this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So tell me more about growing up. You said that you were raised in a bit of purity culture as well. Mm-hmm. You said your mom seems like she was cool. She told you you're beautiful. Like she was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. Tell me more about what that was like though. What was like the dynamic? Like, how did you view, did you have conversations or thoughts about your body as a kid, or was that not something you really thought about till later?
Oh no, I had thoughts about my body for as long as I can remember, because I started masturbating when I was 9, actually. Oh, okay. So I had a lot of thoughts and questions that just went unanswered, because we just didn't. And when sex was talked about in my household, it was more so on a wait till marriage. And if you really just can't wait, then tell me and we can go get some birth control, that kind of thing. My daddy never talked to me about sex. That was strictly like me and my mom type of thing. Okay. Which I appreciate it, but at the same time, I'm like, mom, if I tell you that I'm ready to have sex, you're really going to get me these birth control and be cool and get me condoms. And I think that she would have, but it would have been with like a lot of resistance and regret and resentment. And I'm like, that would have been a way for me to have my first experiences with sex, you know, with you not actually being okay with you, just saying that you are, because you don't want me to get pregnant or you don't want me to, you know, catch an STD, which is great, but it's like, having that type of energy into your first experiences with sex is just not. So I'm like, I'd rather you just not say that at all. So I never did. And I wasn't ready, thankfully. But I'm like, even if I was, I probably still wouldn't come to me. I'd be like, I'm ready. Because the way you had presented it to me was not affirming. It just wasn't, it didn't create a brave and a safe space for me to be okay with telling her like, oh, I'm ready to have sex. So let's go to the clinic now together. It wasn't that. So yeah. And then like masturbation just wasn't talked about, but it was talked about in my church. And it was always taught like as a sin. So having sex before marriage was a sin. Having sex with any person other than a man was a sin. And masturbating was a sin. So like my mom did not repeat any of this stuff, but she just didn't talk about it. It was just taught in the church that I went to, you know, in the church that I grew up in, that we all went to. And we were consistent church for like pretty much every Sunday. Even when I didn't want to go, like she would make me go. And I learned these things in the church, but meanwhile, I'm 9 years old and I'm like, well, I'm having some feeling and I'm doing what y'all saying ain't supposed to be done. It's touching myself and and of course I didn't have language to know it was masturbation, but I'm like, yeah, that's what they saying is not is a sin, but y'all ain't giving me no answers. And I'm just out here just kind of by myself, not knowing. Mm-hmm. And so that went from that to maybe like around 10. Then I discovered porn. My dad, he had a collection of like tapes, like the VCR tapes, you know. That. I had a TV with a VCR tape attached, like built in the TV. So
real classic.
Easy for me. Yeah, classy, mm-hmm. right? So I would sneak tapes, you know, out of the closet and watch them. And I don't even know how I even discovered it or, you know, got the urge to, like, you know, but that's just a thing that kids and the human brain, like, it's going to find things that are concealed. Or probably I watched my daddy pull it out and was like, oh, what is this? Well, why you got it in the closet? So this, why is a secret? You know, me being the smart kid that I am. So I'm like, well, let me see what's going on these tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that it was porn. I'm like, I'm seeing people doing things that I'm hearing in church. It's a sin. And I'm also seeing people masturbating. And I'm like, oh, well, I do that. I touch that, you know? And they feeling good. And that's how I be feeling. So is it really a sin? I got questions. And I'm like watching multiple of these tapes, like, you know, days or, you know, weeks on end, you know, like sneaking. Then I went like to watching real sex. We had HBO at the time and we had some cable then. So we were like, me and my niece, she's 6 months younger than me. So we would go and watch the real sex. And then of course we got Disney Channel on the back button. So we're like seeing these things in real time on screen and actually experiencing them in real time in person in the physical realm. And it's just not adding up to that. All these people are doing the same thing that we're doing, but we're being told that it's wrong and it's a sin that you're going to be condemned and cast to hell for something that seems to us very natural. Like if everybody doing it. So is it really wrong? So yeah, I went years without just not having any answers from 9 until I was in the 10th grade. Like I just really just went without, and I didn't have a source, an outlet to ask. I don't remember ever getting called either. So maybe I might have been once, but I can't remember ever getting called. So I just never said anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when I was in 10th grade, I met a sex educator. Her name is, what is this woman's name? I'll never forget her. India. Her name was India White. And she really inspired me to do what I'm doing today. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was.
How old were you when you met her, you said?
I was in 10th grade, so I was 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got 15
when I met her. Mm.
Wow, that sounds lonely being 9 years old in church and they're all saying this thing you're doing is a sin. And I don't know what other language they use, but around me it was like, you're going to go to hell if this happens.
Abomination.
Yeah, abomination. Make the list of all the reasons.
Right.
But I just think that is really, I mean, did you have that perspective back then? Like, were you afraid that was true when you were masturbating and experiencing that? Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Big time. How'd you deal with that?
I really couldn't even tell you. I think for me, it's just, I just trusted myself. I just trusted my body and I just was going to do what felt right. I always say that like my spirit was just leading me. My ancestors was always leading me. And because I really don't know no other way that I could have continued to explore that because I was so terrified, you know, but I think just something deep down in me was like, you know, I'm going to, and that's why I'm like, I know I was meant to be an activist because I'm like, I've been resisting the norms and the status quo forever. So I think it just was like an innate thing in me to just say, you know, I'm going to trust me and I'm going to go with what I feel is right and what I feel affirmed and feel pleasured by, you know, and feel grounded by, you know, especially because the environment that I grew up in wasn't always healthy. It was very unhealthy and very toxic a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So that was a part of the way that I coped with some of that, you know, the hearing and experiencing some of the verbal and sometimes physical abuse in my home. So yeah, that was an escape for me and a coping mechanism for me sometimes too.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's really cool that you're talking about it in that kind of way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, growing up, I was just never in conversations like this where anyone talked about masturbating as just a normal topic, as something
that's
not. Yeah.
No.
I remember the first I even heard the word was like in middle school, some boy was playing some joke and I was like, what does that mean? Now
Right. Yeah, and I don't even think my church even used the term masturbation. Now that you say that, I feel like I put together the meanings, like they use some other word. And then I think I might've heard the word for the first time when I was in ninth grade in high school, maybe eighth grade, and when I heard the term masturbation. And when they explained, I was like, oh, that's what they was talking about in church. But they didn't use that word, masturbation. Mm-hmm. It's just because I kind of pieced the definition together and I'm like, okay, that's what that is. And that's what I've been doing. That's what they said. So yeah, okay. You're right.
Did that feel good to have language around it?
So good, because I was like, I can't stand being confused. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. And I really realized that it's a trigger for me to be confused just because of other childhood stuff, you know. And it made me just feel like, and it also made me feel a sense of belonging that I wasn't really tripping. Like I wasn't like, because I really thought that like something might have been wrong with me mentally, because I'm like, well, why is everybody acting like this is so bad when everybody doing it? And nobody can tell me what it is. And no one names it and says it. So when I finally heard the term and it was said in a very calm and normal, you know, that normalized, I was like, okay, so I ain't sure. I knew what I was talking about the whole time. So yeah, the language around it definitely made me have a sense of belonging. It just cleared up something. It just created clarity and directness for me in my mind. And I love that. I love that. It was so comforting to finally have that and know that I'm not alone, and also that and of course at the time I didn't know that gaslighting was a thing. So I'm like, yeah, I really just been being gaslit this whole time,
yeah,
and didn't know because people keep saying that this is wrong and that people that do it is an abomination and something's wrong with them. And I'm like, okay, I guess there's something just wrong with me then. I guess I'm just gonna have something be wrong with me, I guess. And so then when I found it, I'm like, nah, ain't that wrong with me. Y'all sure. I ain't here.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. All right.
Oh, great. Man. Was this the time when you learned this language and stuff? Was this with India?
Or was this before? It was before, but she really brought it home for me. So when I just heard the term. And I think it was really just like one of my sex health classes because we were just going over vocabulary. And I don't even know how it came up because it only came up once. I only heard it that one time and then didn't hear it again. So when I met India 2 years later, she really went in depth about masturbation. And I was like, okay, now I really understand that. I get it. And I've been doing this for a long time. So yeah, she helped me to really get context around the term and what it means and the many ways that it can look like too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me more about India. I know I just asked this and you said it right before, but how old again were you when you met her?
I was 15 when I met 15. Her. Yeah. India. And she was an adult at the time. She worked with a group of teen girls. She ran a peer support group for teen moms. Some of the teens were pregnant or already had children. And I was doing like a community service event for something. I had an extracurricular activity. I needed community service hours. And I just always was a person that loved community service. So I chose this particular organization called the South Carolina Contraceptive Access Campaign at the time. Mm. So this was, I was in what, 10th grade? This was 2015. No. This was 2010. What am I talking about? 2015. 2010, right? So I chose this organization and I chose to volunteer, and the organization put me with her to shadow her. So that's how I met her. And so I'm a teen, she's an adult at the time. And I just love watching her do this. And I didn't know that this was a thing. I'm like, I knew like girls in my high school were pregnant and they had babies. But I'm like, I didn't know that it was a space for them to go and convene and vent and chat. Like they sat in a circle and they met like once a week, someplace here in Columbia. And they sat in a circle and they just talked and vent. And then she provided them resources on how to get, you know, stuff like food vouchers and housing and stuff to care for their babies, parenting classes, mothering classes, and just really poured into them to let them know, like, even though you are a teenager and you have a baby, you probably didn't want the child right now, you still are worthy of joy and living your life as a child. You still are a child. You're not an adult. Because I think that's a big thing that we're doing now is trying to, this like this adultification of the Black girls specifically, because it was a group of all Black girls. And like, you're still a child. Still, you still get to be a child, even though you have adult responsibilities now. And I just love that And I love that she really just kept it real with them. You know, there was some stuff that she couldn't, like when we talked about masturbation, it was like a one-on-one between her, because that was something she couldn't really talk about out in the open, because the organization still gave her certain limitations. But she really tried to keep it as really real and direct and straight with them as possible, because they just wasn't giving them that in school. And I'm like, well, this is the result of not having comprehensive sex education, is that you're going to have teens that are having unwanted pregnancy because they just don't have the resources and the tools to navigate sex in a way that is healthy and safe and produces the type of results that they want. Right? So yeah, I just really, like, I get emotional thinking about it. I'm like, I have to find her in life, because I don't know, we lost touch after my senior year and I just have not seen her since then. But really just changed my life forever. So I'm like, I just did not know this was a thing. You know, we didn't have that in my neighborhood. Nobody talked about that type of stuff. And thankfully that my parents did encourage me to do extracurricular activities. So I was able to get access and exposure to things because I was just able to join outside. Like, they could not provide that for me and it wasn't in my neighborhood, but I could, if I found it, I told them I wanted to do it. They're like, all right, we're going to drop you off. You know, they didn't ask no questions about what I was doing. So they quickly found out. They're like, temple, bro. Because at one point I had like a condom bag that I brought home. It was just like, what is my daddy? Tamika, what's this? Like, condom bag. What you doing down there at that organization? I was like, well, now you want to ask what I do.
Now.
So, right. So yeah, it was, I'm like, yeah, you probably ain't never seen one of these, huh? Because you got 4 geeks. You ain't seen one of these. Have you used one of these things?
That's
Have
funny.
Oh yeah, it was, they were really supportive in like me getting the information, even though they could not give that to me. So that was a beautiful thing. Yeah, India, she changed me for the better. So yeah, I'm definitely a sex educator because of her, for sure.
Dude, that's so cool that you have that pinpoint moment in your life when things change and you have that person that like really kind of opened the door for you to see, oh, there's a whole world out there.
Yes, absolutely. She did.
What did your life look like after going to India? Like, did you feel like you, I'm assuming you felt really liberated in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I did. I felt really like I could do anything that I like. I really was feeling like I found my niche. Like, I found what I really wanted. Because I wanted to be a social worker for so long.
Mm-hmm.
From the time I covered, I wanted to be a social worker since I was probably in middle school. I wanted to be a social worker. I knew that I wanted to be a social worker and help people and really just be a person to get people resources. So like, that's the thing. Like, in my neighborhood, I saw people with a lot of problems, but no solutions and no resources to solve the problem. And I actually ended up meeting a social worker when I was in ninth grade through an organization I was in called Upward Bound. Shout out to Upward Bound at USC, Jay Prince, such a beautiful person. He's like a second dad to me. He was the one of my mentors there and brought in these speakers and, you know, people from the community to speak to me and other groups of teens at this college prep program. That's what it was, a college prep program. And I met a social worker there who like talked about the things that I wanted to provide for people in my community that just was not there. And so that was one piece. I said, okay, I'm going to be a social worker. But then when I met Indy, and I was like, well, what she doing is kind of social worky, but more radical. So then I was confused about like what I wanted to do. And so as time went on, I started just meeting more people and doing more research. And India, she also helped me with my senior thesis in high school too. Like, she gave a dildo to like do a condom demonstration. Like, now I'm 12th grade now. I'm 18 at this point. And we had to do a senior thesis in one of my classes, like in order to pass. So I had a big presentation and I did it on the HIV AIDS epidemic. That was my topic, like impact. So I had like video and I had condoms. And so I had to get like so many permission slips to like, look, this is what I want to do. And it was a panel of judges, of like these four teachers judging my presentation. So yeah, she came through with that. Mm. And after a while, once I graduated and I went on to Coker College for undergrad, and I was like, okay, I'm going to major in social work, because I realized like I could be a social worker that talks about sex. Like, I can, that can be a thing. But still, at the time, I still wasn't fully committed to it, because I still was a little scared, still unlearning a lot of that suppression, a lot of that purity culture, Christian, real strict modest type of values. So she helped me with this project. You know, I get through the project. I aced it, you know, course passed, graduated, went on to Coker. But I was like, yeah, I still want to do what Miss India is doing. I didn't have the language sex educator at the time. I don't even think I knew what that was. But I was like, I just want to do that, what Miss India did. I also had a concentration in African American studies that I didn't even pick up until like my senior year at in undergrad. So I was like, well, I want to do something hella rack and radical because I'm like, I'm a hella black radical person, but I'm also queer, but I wasn't really accepting I was queer and wasn't really accepting this like radical sex stuff about me. So it's just a lot of learning and like coming into my own. I just knew that it all was important. It all was valid. And I knew I wanted to incorporate all of parts of me in some kind of way. It didn't come together for me until maybe like my senior year in at Coker. I was a safe stat for the Advocates for Youth organization. So I did that. I applied to be like this safe site for the Great American Condom Campaign. So basically, I got sent this huge box of condoms and these instructions and a little condom purse, you know, all of those things. And I basically just like passed out condoms on my campus and I hosted these discussions about sexuality and sexual. So that was kind of like my start as a sex educator. This was like 10th grade, my sophomore and junior year in undergrad. So at that moment, it was starting to come together like, okay, is this social work too? Because this is looking real much like what the social worker that I met and the social worker that I met that inspired me. Her name's Kimberly, and she's just amazing as well. Really, really inspired me to be a social, because I have a master's in social work. So I am a social worker. I'm a social worker. That's a sex educator. So it started to like really come together because in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm helping people. I'm reaching them. I'm giving them resources. I'm giving like tangible resources, condoms. I'm giving them education. All these things are resources. So that's what a social worker does. And I'm also like telling them about how to love their body and that they can have different rules for themselves and how they live their life and how they love and how they, you know, get access to things. So yeah, it started to really come together for me around my senior year that, okay, I can be a sex educator and a social worker. And at some point after I graduated undergrad and went on to grad school, and I went to USC here in Columbia, I realized that a lot of sex educators that I started finding. So then I started finding my tribe. Like I'm following people online and meeting people out in the community that are sex educators. So I started finding that word. Erica Hart is like one of my favorite sex educators. They are amazing. So I'm like, okay, a lot of them are social workers. I just started to realize that. So I also started meeting people that was in the field of intimate partner violence and doing domestic violence work and doing sexual violence work too. And I realized that was also under the sexual health umbrella. So I did a lot of my interns with organizations like that. And a lot of my interns with youth too. So I was like, well, I also want to work with youth because I was working with youth at different camps and stuff like that. Not with sex education, but just in general. So I'm like, okay, now I know I like working with kids. And now I know I like working with juveniles. And now most of my kids that I work with are they from the streets, you know, they're experiencing poverty, you know, and they're in and out of DJJ. They don't have access to this information. So I'm like, it's just like my life and just stuff that I've been going through kind of built who my work was for and why it was for, who it was for, right? And why it was the way that it was. So yeah, I think that was that kind of time period where I really felt free, like coming into this information from Miss India. And then matriculating through college just made me feel like, yeah, like this is who I am. I feel liberated. I feel empowered. And I also feel like I can provide that sense of empowerment to other people or at least give them the tools to empower themselves. You know, I believe about people empowering themselves in whatever way that was. So, yeah, that it did. It made me feel even more than empowered. I don't even know the word for it because I just feel grand, like I could like really do something big, you know, huge. And I did not always feel that I could do something that big. And now we're here with Yasei. I got my own organization. Like I was doing a lot of stuff for other people's organizations, interning and being a sex educator for other organizations. But I'm like, I want my own to do that. And now I got that. So I'm like, I did do something big and it's just even getting bigger. So I'm expanding and I want even more community, even more of an impact to happen. But yeah, that led me to where I'm at. Sure.
Oh man, that's so cool. I love how you just kept discovering more passions that you had, more things that you care about, more groups of people you wanted to talk to, and how you just kind of took it all and mashed it together into what you wanted to do. You like created like a whole, like all these things exist, but you kind of also created your own thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's someone for sure at the door. We got both the dogs barking out there. Oh man, that's really, really awesome. Tell me a little bit more about, I was looking through your Instagram and I saw something about a talk you gave about consent culture versus rape culture. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. It was such a beautiful day. So I got booked to facilitate this workshop with a group of young people. I actually got booked to do a whole day of programming with this group of young people with the Every Black Girl Inc. organization. Beautiful nonprofit that provides resources and education to ensure that every Black girl thrives. And a part of every Black girl thriving is that the whole world around her has to thrive, right? So there were also Black boys in this particular group, but they also have some non-binary youth that come into workshops and programming with them. Most of the time it is the same group of young people, but sometimes they differ, right? So this particular group of young people I had been in contact and in work with before at a different leadership or a day or a weekend in May. So I kind of was familiar with a lot of the faces, and we did something different, you know, that they typically don't do, right? And so, you know, I was thinking about like, okay, whole day of programming, what am I going to talk about? You know, because I have curriculum that I'm developing for my own organization, Sex Positive Sessions. So when I get booked by other organizations, I typically just teach from that. Right. So I was inspired and challenged by this group of young people because they are so bright. But they also they gonna know, like, when you're bluffing and you don't know what you're talking about. Like they gonna keep it real. So it's like I gotta really come on my A game with them. And it really was me providing a space for them to talk about something that they're not provided with in school that I know is important. And so we did. We went through the meaning of what consent is versus what rape culture is, and just kind of defining and giving them examples of like that we do live in a rape culture, but this is what consent culture looks like, and this is how we get here. Why are we in the place that we are? What's the roots of that? What are some of the systems and structures that have led us here? And what can we do to get to the consent culture, right? What can we do to get to this more, again, imaginative world, this more expansive world where all Black girls are thriving and all the world around her is thriving, right? So that means every single person around her, regardless of their race or gender, has to also thrive, right? So what does that look like? How do we get to that? So that's really what the workshop was about. So we did just a series of activities and exercises from watching a poetry video and kind of analyzing that, like how do you put into words and use language to get a message across about consent culture? How does the media and pop culture and music impact our ideas and ideologies about consent or rape? You know, what does that look like? And then, like, we did an exercise where we made a consent declarations of consent. So we made like these consent constitutions almost, where you really make a statement for yourself on what it is that you want to embody to create a consent culture. So they made their own little statements to say, you know, I consent to doing this, you know, or I declare to do this in order to create a consent culture. We created like little beaded bracelets, right? That was supposed to represent our common thread of values and ethics that we're going to use together to create a consent culture. So they all got in groups and they were told to like take out 10 beads and like name each of the beads for like, you like maybe it's five people in a group. You take out 10 beads. You take out 10 beads. And y'all name what's of value to you. Like, what do you love? What are you passionate about? And y'all come together and see where y'all have a common interest and common values. And you put it on this one little string. And this is our common thread. You know, as a community, as humanity, these are the things that are going to tie us together in order to get to the type of world that we want to see, where we are disrupting racism, where we are disrupting homophobia, where we are disrupting ableism and colorism, and you know, all these things that continue to create barriers for us. This common thread is what's going to help to remove those barriers away to get to that world that we want to live in, to get to that consent culture that we want to live in. And they loved it. It was beautiful. And in between, you know, we breaking, snacking, you know, Millie rocking, you know, all the latest dances that the kids got now. You know, I'm hell like, yeah. Okay, y'all got to teach me that. Do that again. All the TikToks.
The TikToks,
you know, and they get embarrassed. They're like, Miss Tamika, please stop. I'm like, hey now. Hey. I'm here. Okay, I'm the cool teacher. She's like, you cool, but you know, like, not that cool. I'm like,
it's different cool.
All right, fine. Not that cool. Not that cool. It's fine.
Oh, that's okay. Funny. But when yeah, they teach you, you gotta teach me because I need some help over here.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'm like, I can't. These hips, I got hips now, but I'm like, I don't want to throw my hip off because I ain't got insurance. Y'all have it. I ain't gonna be doing that for too long.
Get all hip replacements already for the TikTok.
Right, already. Exactly.
Oh, man. That's so cool. Mm. I just think that that's such a beautiful idea, the common thread mm-hmm. of creating a whole new culture. Because that's really what we have to do with all of this stuff is wipe it away and start over. Because it's all rooted in so much bad stuff that it's like we just have to start over. And that's how you mm-hmm. do it. And I think that that's so cool.
Yeah. It was amazing. And I love it. I love working with young people. Like, it's my favorite. Out of all the things that I do and things I get booked for, that's my favorite thing to do. Mm. Absolutely. And shout out to Every Black Girl Inc. though. Vivian Anderson is the founder, and Edie at Every Black Girl Inc. Amazing organization doing the work, disrupting the school to prison pipeline every day, shaking the table. We love to see it.
Yes. Okay, Every Black Girl Inc. I will put that in the description box below. Please. If you want one, when we're done, actually, if you want to email me a list of resources that are good, then I can put them all out there because I've never heard of this stuff. So I want to know it so I can spread it. This is awesome.
Absolutely. I got you. I will do that for sure.
For sure. Well, listen, I have a few more questions for you before we listen to your spoken word, which I'm super excited about. But one of them is, I've been trying to figure out how I wanted to ask this question. It's like, I know what I want to ask, but words are hard sometimes. How would you say, so here, bear with me here. Let's see if I got it. How would you say all of this knowledge and experience that you've had mm-hmm. over your sexuality and coming into yourself and realizing, which we didn't even touch on, which I wanted to, but I don't know if we have time for it. When you realized, or when you came to determine that you were queer, that's mm-hmm. such a huge moment. That's huge. It's just all these pieces of who you are. How do you feel like that journey has shaped your relationship with your body?
It has shaped it in such a positive way, because actually that's a part of what has made it so expansive. My relationship was so expansive because for me, it let not only with my body, but with my body in relation to other people's bodies who I may want to engage with, because it just let me know that it doesn't have to be so limited and so binary for me. It doesn't have to just be, me engaging with men, you know, or me engaging with people with penises, but it can be me engaging with people with multiple different types of bodies. But definitely me engaging with women, because I'm like, I knew that I was always attracted to women, you know, attracted to girls when I was a girl. I just didn't have the space to act on that or to just explore that in whatever way, which it didn't always have to be physical. So for me, it shaped the relationship with my body because it allowed to have more appreciation for my body. Number one, because I'm seeing like all the varying different people who are queer and that they have very different. That's another thing. It's like, because for me, queer was a negative term when I was growing up, right? Mm. So I didn't even know that was like a thing that was positive and that was embraced. It was just like, you gay or you straight, you know? We did know bi was a thing, but that also had a negative connotation to it. It's like, oh, you greedy and you know, all of these things, you know? So for me, gay, being gay, especially if you were a gay girl, was you didn't look. You only looked a certain type of way. Like, we thought that gay girls were only butch. Like, they were only studs. Like, I wasn't taught that being gay or being queer could look very different. I just only saw, like, it was a mass presenting girl that wear traditionally boy clothes. And that was it, you know? So it just kind of expanded my viewpoint of that. And I think that's what that made me a lot confused and suppressive, because I'm like, well, I don't dress like that. So am I queer? Because I don't dress like that and I don't present in that way. Of course, didn't have language for, there's a difference between your gender expression and your actual gender or your sexuality and then how you express that. Like, it just, I didn't have that. So it made me feel like I was confused, but I was wrong. Of course, in combination with all the other like really strict Christian background and all those type of principles. But yeah, so now when I actually stepped into that and accepted that this is what my attraction is, and I found the term bisexual and I found the term panromantic. So I'm like, okay, well that describes me. So now I'm like, okay, it does look very different. And this is a body that can be that. Like I am bisexual and panromantic and my body is this. It can be that, and that's okay, right? And there's a lot of mm-hmm. other people's bodies who I also may want to engage with sexually, romantically, or any other way that also may look like mine or may look very different than mine. And that's also okay. So yeah, I think it just made me have a wider perspective. Made me appreciate my body more to know that it was valid for me to be in this body and still identify that way. And that it was okay for me to love and appreciate other people's bodies that may look similar to mine or different than mine. And they identify any kind of way that they wanted to, and that those things didn't have to be mutually inclusive. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Sure.
Oh, I love all that too. I love it so much. There's just when you stick to like the gender binaries or the sexuality binaries or whatever, it's so confining and there's so many rules. And I love hearing you talk about how you process of like, well, they say that mm-hmm. this is what a gay woman's body is supposed to look like. I don't look like that. So what am I like? It's very similar to how you talked about when you were learning about masturbation when you were 9.
Yeah.
And what's so cool is that you ask these questions and you wonder and you don't just accept that and be like, okay, this is what's true. But you internalize it and you find what you believe is true and you find what matters to you. I just think you're such a cool person. I'm so happy to get to talk to you. Yeah, receive it. I love it. Oh man, I could talk to you for a long time. I'm really excited for people to hear this interview.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah.
Yes.
This is juicy. I love these conversations like this. It get me revved up and excited, especially because it's like a break in the monotony of my days and just the world with just the varying things that occur, good, bad, and indifferent. So I love when I'm in a space with people that have like minds and we really can just go there and go the distance. You know, I don't mm-hmm. get that very, very often. So yeah. I appreciate the space for sure.
For sure. Yeah. So my second to last question for you is this might be a very big, broad question, but what advice would you give to someone who's maybe like a teenager or even in their like 20s and they're starting to try to want to have these conversations about sexuality for the first time. And they are maybe similar to where like we grew up in the purity culture world and it's just not normal to talk about it with their friends and family. What's some advice or words of encouragement you would give them?
Words of encouragement is to follow your heart, follow your body, and trust yourself. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest thing. And that's not always easy. I'm not going to sugarcoat and say that's an easy thing to do. And in fact, it can be very difficult and hard sometimes. However, it's so worth it once you do it. And really, you really got to commit to it, though. Like, really commit to trusting yourself and trusting your body, trusting your intuition. Because for me, I found that just does not lead you astray in the long run, right? And you're going to come up against some obstacles along the way, internal battles and external battles. For me, but that's just going to lead you at least to some point of contention that's going to get you more clarity. Because like that's just the beginning, like trusting yourself and going with the flow and going with your body is just one thing. But I think that it will lead you to other resources, other language, other people that can help you really define what that is for yourself once you're coming into your sexuality or coming into what your ideas about sexual health look like. It's going to lead you into the right direction. If you're trusting what you feel and going with what you feel, I just think that that's the best way to not lead you wrong. Like you won't lead you wrong. And even if you do, you're going to find your way. Cause like, this is home. Within you is home. Like you are home. You know, a lot of us try to find home and sanctuary in other people when we have it right here in ourselves. And I think that leads you to find other tribe members, other places of groundedness and other places of belonging when you find that sense of belonging in yourself. Not easy at all. I just think that may be a great start to accepting that and navigating that the best way that you can, you know. And it changes day to day. Some days you ain't gonna be as confident about it. Some days it's not going to be pretty and nice and cute. And some days it will. Some days it will be very easy, you know, and you'll find that. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I love how the thing at the end where you said every day is going to look different. That's helpful. I remember when I was looking at this for the first time, I was like, okay, it has to be this very specific way every single day.
Yeah.
That's really good to know that it's going to be bumpy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Sam, my next question for you has nothing to do with anything we've been talking to about.
Let's do it. I love it. Right. You know, my sporadic brain, I'm like, hey, we're going from point to point to point because it's all relevant at some point. Even when we don't know it is, it wraps around. So we can do that.
Absolutely. I love it. Okay. All right. Let's see. Tamika, would you rather every Tuesday and Thursday for the rest of your life, have you seen the movie Jumanji? Or no, wait.
Jumanji?
Yeah, Jumanji.
I have. Unless there's multiple versions, I've seen the one with Robert. You know who I'm talking about. Robert, what's his name?
Is it the newer one?
Really famous. I've only seen the older version. Jumanji. Okay. What is his name? Robert is a really famous actor. Older white guy, circle glasses. Passed a few years ago.
I know who you're talking about.
I've seen that one. Two kids.
Mrs. Doubtfire guy?
Huh?
Was he Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
Robert Williams.
Yes, Robert Williams. Yes, I've seen that Jumanji. Because I know it might have been some other remakes, but I've only seen that one.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So would you rather every Tuesday and Thursday you became a part of a board game like in Jumanji, where your whole day revolved and it's a different board game every week and they explain the rules and you have to go through this board game through the day. And it's not dangerous per se. Like you're not going to get hurt. You're going to come out of there exactly the same, but it is stressful. Mm. It feels like there's a lot at stake. In these worlds, anything could be real. There could be dragons. There could be lions. There could be tax collectors like a Monopoly. I don't know. It's all going to be there.
That's scary.
Monopoly's the worst, man. Or would you rather... Oh, I had it and then it left. Okay, we're going to come up with something. Oh, no, okay. I remember it. Or would you rather... Every Tuesday and Thursday, rather than the board game, you became an extra in someone else's like romantic comedy movie, and you were always around and you were watching this movie happen. It's different every week. You're just kind of there and you're in this movie and you're watching whatever cheesy couple get together.
Oh.
That's not stressful. That's just like you're there and this is your day. If you like rom-coms.
I love rom-com, but that could annoy the hell out of me depending on who the couple is.
Mm-hmm. There's some
I'm like, would I rather be annoyed or anxiety-filled?
Those are very good options.
I think I'm going to go with Jumanji because even though I have hella anxiety, because the thrill in me, one, adventure and just like feeling like I might die, but then don't, and I survive, I don't like that feeling, but I could not, and I could just have a great adventure, and I could win some money, depending on the board game. I could like, be in Tahiti or something, like, host myself. I think I'm going to take a chance with the board game.
I would do the same, because you're absolutely right. You're going to go on adventures. I don't know are you into board games? Do you play?
I am into board games. I don't play them a lot, but I am into them. One of them that I love the most, small plug, is one of my good friends, Tanisha Hall, Queen It Shall Be on Instagram. She is a board game developer and she is the owner of Hillman the Game. So it is a board game based on the nostalgia of a different world. We love the A Different World sitcom back in the day.
Oh, so she created, awesome.
Her company is called In All Seriousness, but Seriousness. You can follow her on Instagram at Hillman the Game. Yeah, okay. Hillman the Game.
Amazing. All these links because I'm a board game nerd. So I gotta find it.
Yes. Board games is so dope. Yes.
Absolutely. Oh man, I love that. Well, before we say our farewells, do you want to go ahead and read us your poem, your spoken word about your body?
I would, absolutely. So this is 20 pounds. 20 pounds.
But do you have it memorized?
I do.
That's awesome.
You're so getting cool. a live show. You should be grateful.
Yeah.
You can book me, though, if you want to hear more. I'm gonna give y'all a little sample.
Okay, yeah, then, just a sample. Just give us a taste.
Dude in the bar says, if I just gain 20 more pounds, then I'll be good. I hate you. Do you know how hard I tried to gain 20 more pounds? Your comments isn't flattering. It's only a reminder of how I've never been the woman of any man's dream. You know, because all Black women are supposed to have a little cushion for them to push into cup size, never full their cup size, never full enough to quench their thirst for monogamy, or even remind them that I am still a woman. This body is only representation. One I've always tried to change, but nothing ever worked for me, not the patch, shakes, pills, prayer, or even plastic surgery I contemplated since age 13 in high school. Lunchtime was the worst part of my day. One time I stuffed my mouth so much I could feel vomit rise in my throat. If I didn't eat a lot, I'd be ridiculed until the bell rang, anorexic, giraffe necking. Girl, if you turn to the side, you'd probably disappear. Any days I wish I would have. Bombarded by a group of teachers with their eyes widened at the sight of my torso. They placed their palms against my waist, screamed in my face, oohs and ahs. Put fingers around my wrist and ask me if I eat. Instead of asking me, am I hungry? I have been starving for acceptance. I did everything possible to just gain 20 more pounds until I realized acceptance cannot be forced, dear man in the bar. I do not desire to be your vixen. No longer will I be a victim to what you think a woman's body should look like. I ain't that little girl no more. I understand this body is all that it's supposed to be. Although my frame is small, my heart is big. Voice big. Everything about me be big. Now, I can't say the same about you. I actually like a man who appreciates big things that come in small packages. One who won't take the small opportunity to boost his big ego. I like a man that don't mind stepping down to my level to get the goodness coming to him if he's worthy. I learned my worth. You will not lower my self-esteem to match my size zero pain. I ain't got enough booty meat to cushion your insecurities. My body isn't too small. Your misogyny just comes in large portions. I am not the one who killed your joy. Though your words are bullets I'll have to dodge for the rest of my life, I can now look at myself in the mirror and say, you are beautiful. Hug myself without feeling the growl of hatred in the pit of my stomach. I love this little house of body. From my wine glass waist to my pillow plush lips, bed piece thighs, I don't need to renovate when everything about me looks like home. I will not apologize for these bones. So fuck you and your 20 pounds.
And yes. Oh, I love that so much.
Thank you. I hope y'all enjoyed it. Yeah, so that's 20 pounds. You can see it, video. One of the most popular videos of it, it's a viral video of it on right about now. It's a poetry page. So if you follow Juan Poetry, Juan stands for Right About Now Poetry, Juan Poetry on Facebook and Instagram, the video is there. It's also on, it should be on my poetry page too, at Talks with Tamika. So yeah, get you it. Or just YouTube it and say 20 pounds, Tamika, it'll come up.
Amazing. Yeah. I will say this again. I'll put all the links in the description box below for anyone who's interested. Please go follow Tamika, follow there. You have a separate poetry page?
Yes, I have poetry page, Talks with Tamika. Of course, my Yase, you the firm certification is We Are Yase. And then my personal page is Sex Formation Goddess.
Okay. Amazing, amazing. Well, Tamika, thank you so much for giving so much of your time today to just share your story and answer my questions and share all of this incredibly important information with whoever's going to listen to this podcast. I'm so happy they get to hear your story.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. I really, really appreciate it. I always enjoy conversations like this, like I said, just fruitful and just like really, really going the distance, really getting to the root of things and not being afraid to talk so authentically and so freely about what we all be thinking, but sometimes be a little afraid to say. So I'm glad that we created this space for folks to be able to receive and absorb that. So I appreciate you for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, it's so good. Tamika, if you are ever in St. Louis, come say what's up.
I'll wait you
at the grocery store. We'll go throw a frisbee at the park or something.
Yes, I would.
We're going
to
do it.
Love that. I would love that. I actually want to come to St. Louis because I want to go to the Twisted Ranch. I want to go to the Twisted Ranch. So it's a restaurant that has like over 150 different flavors of ranch. I'm a ranch fanatic.
Wait, I didn't know this existed. This is in St. Louis?
And that, yep, St. Louis, Missouri. It's called the Twisted Ranch. It is. I really want to go there. It's on my bucket list. So yes, when I come, I'm gonna hit you up for sure.
Okay, I'm gonna go with you there. I have a ranch.
Yes, so we have to go. Kindred, going.
Oh man, that's so good. Well, Tamika, thank you so much again. You have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will see you at the Twisted Ranch.
Yes, I'll see you there. Bye,
y'all. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of The Unity Project. If you guys enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes that you've heard, please go give it a rating anywhere that you listen to podcasts, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, Podbean, any of the places. Also, if you want to connect further, then go follow me on Instagram at jackieg.tv. Send me a message there. Ask anything that you want. I got links there if you want to check out my book, if you want to get more involved in the podcast. Everything's there. Love hearing from you guys. So thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.